When you look inside your medicine cabinet, you'll likely see prescriptions and supplements, topical creams and oils. Some of them are plant-based, sure, but others, not so much. That's a change from when nearly every medicine we used originally came to us from plants, flowers, roots, and tree bark. There's plenty of examples to point to, like the bark of a willow tree helping to create aspirin. But in today's world, some would argue we're losing that connection to the natural. And at what cost? By ignoring plants, we're losing out on the opportunity to discover new life-saving medicines needed in the fight against the greatest medical challenge of the 21st century, the rise of the post-antibiotic era. That's on the mind of Dr. Cassandra Quave. She's a leading researcher in new medicines, but the destruction of natural habitats around the world and a lack of funding for research into new antibiotics is causing a huge concern for medical professionals. Culture Shift's Amanda LeClaire spoke with her about her new memoir, The Plant Hunter, and how she began her adventures in the field of ethnobotany.
Yeah, there's always a bit of adventure. And either when we're in the lab or in the field, for sure. I mean, that's what makes life fun, right? So it's a great fit for me. Ethnobotany is the scientific study of how people relate to plants and to the natural world in general. So this can pertain to everything from our relationships to plants that we use for clothing or for food or for construction materials, you know, musical instruments, art, all of those above, as well as for medicine. And, you know, people have always used plants as medicine. There are records that go back, hundreds and thousands of years showing how we've used plants as medicine. And we know that today there are around 34,000 species of plants. So that's roughly 9% of all plant life on Earth that has been used in some form of traditional medicine as a means of providing medical care to people. And I think what's most exciting about the work that we do today is like we're really exploring a new frontier, because most of these species have never been studied under the lens of science. And there is an incredible amount of really interesting things that are out there to discover.
I think a lot of people are familiar with herbalism and the way, you know, something like peppermint tea, the peppermint plant can, you know, calm and soothe an upset stomach. At what point does, you know, seeking and using plants for medicine turn into what we now call the field of ethnobotany?
Ethnobotany is not the practice of herbal medicine. It's more of a scientific study about how people use plants as medicine or for other practices as well. The term was coined back in the 1800s, but really, you know, naturalists and explorers have been documenting how different indigenous groups, different communities have used plants as medicine for centuries, right? So the difference, I think, between modern herbalism and some of these other kind of medical practices is, you know, there are a lot of crossovers. A lot of modern herbalism today originates in kind of European traditions of herbalism. But every single culture, every single group of people, every language that's ever existed on Earth has included, information on how people can use different botanical resources to serve as sources of medicine.
I'd love to talk about how you got started in this field. In your book, The Plant Hunter, this has been something that you have, I guess it seems like it's a calling for you. Would you say that?
Yeah, I think it's been a calling, but it also was by no means a direct path. I like to think of my career trajectory as a very winding path that brought me to where I'm at. But I think that's really what makes it a great path, because I was exposed to many different disciplines of science and medicine along the way. You know, as a kid, I always thought I was destined to become a surgeon, an orthopedic surgeon in particular, because of my own personal struggles with health issues as a child. And I just hero worshiped my doctors and wanted to be just like them someday. But it wasn't really until I had this experience in college when I had the opportunity to work with an indigenous healer in the Amazon rainforest and also meet with local community members about how they used plants as medicine, that I really found my path was going to be a bit different. And instead of practicing medicine, I decided to pursue a path that allowed me to discover new medicines.
I mean, that's an incredible journey, incredible opportunity that you had to study in the Amazon like that. When you think back, was there a particular moment or particular plant that you could say like that was what anchored you to wanting to pursue ethnobotany?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say that plant for me was probably the ohe fig. Its scientific name is Ficus insipida. This tree and the lessons of this tree really, really grounded me and helped me find where I wanted to go. Because this is a plant that historically has been used as a means of, you know, acting as a vermifuge or deworming kids. So imagine if you're living in the Amazon, it's very common to drink raw river water. Like you just scoop your hand into the water, you drink, or you get a bucket of water, you bring it up to your hut, you drink that, and children run around barefoot. And so they carry a lot of intestinal parasites in their body as a result of that. Now, if you have very high parasite loads, that can lead to a lot of other bad health consequences, from anemia to respiratory disease to, diarrhea pains, but also to being kind of more susceptible to infectious diseases like malaria. And so working with this traditional healer, I learned that this ohe fig was being used historically, and he still uses it to treat patients basically as a way of regular deworming of kids to keep those parasite loads down. But in working with mothers and local community members that were no longer really belonged to an indigenous group that were more westernized and yet had very little access to modern medicine, at the same time, they lost their indigenous healers in those communities. And so they had these trees growing in each community, and yet no one really knew how to use it anymore. And for me, that just struck such a chord that here you have a medicine that could really help people. And yet because of the loss of that knowledge, as the traditional system of medicine was really pushed out, children were suffering as a consequence. And so that's probably the one that helped me find that decision or come to that decision that I wanted to pursue this field of study.
I mean, that is such a huge loss. You're talking about the knowledge of these indigenous cultures of the plants that surround us. In your work, how do you approach something like that? And how do you, I guess, try to hopefully keep some of this indigenous knowledge alive?
Oh, that's such a great question. I mean, I think first and foremost, any of the work that we do with different groups, with different communities and indigenous groups is really all based on a spirit of collaboration and making sure that the community needs are put first. So there's a lot of conversations with community leaders, with cultural leaders, and trying to understand what they need the most out of this kind of collaboration in our work. And time and again, I've often gotten the feedback that what they would really like is some of the knowledge that we're recording to be returned to them in a format that's accessible. So that means, we take these findings and write up scientific papers, which are not very accessible because they're in a different language. They're in English, right? Not necessarily in the local language. And they're in this kind of sciencey speak. And so what we do is we lead workshops to bring the knowledge back to the community and have discussions with community members. We've also written kind of books and pamphlets in the local language with photos of the plants and kind of describing what the historical use or the ethnobotanical relevance of the species was in the community. And then we've also even built, local small botanical gardens to use in education for some of the local schools. And so these are some of the ways that we bring back that knowledge to the communities. We also bring back information on how these plants work. For the discoveries that we find in our laboratory, understanding the potential safety and efficacy of these is really important to local healers. And so we also bring that information back to them as well.
Again, I want to get more into some of the plants and the potential medicines that you are working on and you are interested in and in your work right now. But, I think something that's important to also, I'm curious about, is that we hear a lot about habitat loss, especially in places like the Amazon. and that we are losing so much of this natural habitat that it could be quite detrimental to the way and the medicinal needs that we will need going forward into the future. Is that something that you have dealt with in your career so far?
Absolutely. I mean, I saw it happening more than 20 years ago in the Amazon, just huge trees being felled and floated downriver. And it's important to note that a lot of this resource extraction does not come at the benefit of local people. There may be some local people that have some short-term employment from such initiatives, but really the big money goes to these large corporations. And so resource extraction in many places is a big problem. It's a big challenge. We also have a lot of loss of species and habitats due to transition of our lands towards, agriculture, whether it's for rearing beef cattle in Brazil, for example, or growing soy on the large scale. And this soy is not necessarily for human consumption. It's for animal consumption, for animal feed. The same can be said for corn. So you see these big transitions in land use patterns that are happening all over the place and are coming at a very steep consequence, not only because of the loss of biodiversity, but also to local people, because I think it's important for the listeners to understand as well that 80% of people in the developing world rely on plants as their main source of medicine. And so what happens when they lose the lands where those plants grow in the wild? You're basically taking away one of their major resources for survival. And that's a big challenge. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to write this book, is really to raise awareness about this and some of the other challenges that we face currently in medicine.
Let's go into some of those other challenges. You write about in your book, The Plant Hunter, that another huge, huge challenge that is going to be coming up in the next few decades, and this is going to be affecting people globally, is the lack of new antibiotics. Can you go into that a little more?
Yeah. I mean, I think most of your listeners have probably suffered from an infection at some point in their life, whether it was a ear infection or maybe a UTI. I suffered from a nearly deadly infection at the age of 3. I had a postoperative, surgical site infection when they amputated my leg that nearly killed me because of staph. And this was in the 1980s. Now, luckily, it was in the 1980s before we had so many super resistant strains. You know, if that had happened today, I don't know if the outcome would have been the same, because we've seen progressively rising numbers in these completely untreatable infections, because many of these bacteria have evolved mechanisms to overcome the activity of antibiotics. It's also important to note that people don't become resistant to antibiotics. It's the bacteria that infect people that do. I'll give some stats to you. So in 2016, there was a report that came out of the UK government that showed that around 700,000 people died globally per year due to untreatable infections. That number was projected to reach 10 million by mid-century. The most recent report, which was based on 2019 data, showed that we are right on track. 1.27 million people that died due to these untreatable infections. And these rates of resistance, by the way, have also started to spike during the COVID-19 pandemic, because we have more and more seriously critically ill patients in the hospital that are receiving a lot of antibiotics to treat all these other kinds of side infections that can come with COVID-19. So we're facing a serious problem. At the same time, our most recent antibiotic that's been brought to market, a new class of antibiotic brought to market, was discovered, get this, in the 1980s, right? The 1980s, more than 40 years ago. That's the last peak of innovation when it comes to antibiotics. So, one of the things that I really try to elaborate on in the book is that we, number one, need to be looking for new types of antibiotics urgently, right now, today. We cannot wait, because we know what's coming. And number two, I think that a logical place to look for those new antibiotics is in the natural world, because guess what? People have been using plants to treat their infections for thousands of years. And yet we haven't really bothered to undertake the scientific research on most of these plant sources of these anti-infective medicines to understand which compounds are responsible for their activities, how do they work, and how safe they are. And so that's something that we're really passionate about in my research group, is trying to dig into that pile of 34,000 species to identify novel compounds, novel chemistries that could help us fight the coming tide of antibiotic resistance.
It seems like these are kind of setting all of us up for a huge, huge problem going forward. The habitats of these places, these areas being destroyed, and the lack of money in the pharmaceutical industry, the lack of discovery of wanting to, you know, put money toward that, toward these new medicines. I guess if there was a number, a percentage point of how concerned you are about these two like waves coming together, what would it be?
I mean, I'm 120% concerned. I don't know how much more concerned I can be. It's, I don't want to be alarmist at the same time. I mean, it is alarming, but we do have time to act if we start acting now and really start putting the types of efforts, the type of funding needed to support this discovery research today. We do have time to act. And what's really exciting to me as a scientist is that today we have some incredible tools in our scientific toolkits. We can now read the language of nature like never before. If you think about a single plant tissue, let's say a single leaf may have, you know, more than 1,000 distinct, unique chemical compounds present inside of it. But now with these new tools in chemistry, we can take a closer look at the composition of those molecules, and we can, you know, perform tests in a much more rapid fashion. So I think we're in a different place than we were in the 1980s. And I think it's a time really to start revisiting many of these natural products and really start looking, using these exciting new tools that we have at hand.
That's Dr. Cassandra Quave, a leading ethnobotanist and author of the new memoir, The Plant Hunter. Culture Chef's Amanda LeClaire spoke with her about the book and the vital need for new antibiotics in medicine. You heard that interview right here on Culture Shift on WDET.